Hello everyone, this is the Know Your Place podcast, and this is episode 7. On this week's episode, David comes on to talk about growing up in Washington State and moving to Indiana. He also talks about drugs. Stay tuned. Hello everyone, this is the Know Your Place podcast, and we're on episode 7. I can't believe it, 7 whole episodes of this podcast. And then this week, I have a special guest with me. His name is David. Say hello to the fans, David.
Hello, fans.
And David here is coming on to talk about Washington State. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yes. Now, Washington State already has one strike against it, because when we talk about Washington, I think most people think the capital and not the state.
Right. Yep. I'm always getting confused of being the being from where the Redskins play.
Right. Yes. So. Anyway. So we're going to talk about that this week and why you're now a Hoosier. You know, instead of, I don't know, what do they call people from Washington? Do they have a...
Washingtonians.
Washingtonians, okay. All right, so I guess I'll sort of start with my preconceived notions of Washington and see how quickly you can burst them.
All right.
Let's see. First, obviously, I know about Seattle, right? You know, the show Frasier, I guess, comes to mind. And Starbucks and coffee houses.
Right. Starbucks, yeah.
And let's see, I also know about the band, obviously the bands like Nirvana and Alice in Chains and stuff like that, which is, again, all Seattle. But I do know that there's more to Washington State than Seattle, because I'm a big fan of the football coach Mike Leach, who coaches the Washington State Cougars. So I've heard about, what's that town? Pullman, Washington. And I'm also aware of Spokane. And my step-grandfather back in the day used to drive truck. And he used to drive on the Washington side of the state line to dodge paying some kind of fees that you have to pay when you have a toll. Or, they have those things where you have to pay to get weighed. He would, like, dodge it by driving on the Washington side across from Oregon or something.
Okay.
That's...
Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do to get by, right?
Yeah, I guess so. So, yeah, and then, of course, you guys... of course, I've also heard that Washington's, you know, in an imminent threat to be blown up by volcanoes. So...
Well, we did have Mount Rainier back in 1980, so that's probably... I think everyone's been walking on eggshells ever since.
So, okay, yeah, so that's, but I guess sort of, so I guess we'll start with sort of talking about your hometown experiences there. What do you remember about being a kid in Washington? And, of course, we've got to talk about what part of Washington you're from.
Sure, yeah, I grew up in Western Washington, which, if anyone has ever been to Washington, both sides, there's a big difference between Western Washington and Eastern Washington, as where Western Washington's the side where the Puget Sound is on. It's a lot more green, a lot more pine trees, kind of that, you know, scenic view. And then when you go to Eastern Washington, it's more dry, flat farming land. So I grew up on the west side in a town called Kingston, which is in Kitsap County, and it's right there on the Puget Sound. And I remember as a kid just growing up and, you know, just like a normal childhood.
Fishermen in your town?
Fish, yeah, there's a lot of fish, because it's right off, and actually I could walk from where I lived. I could walk about 10, 15 minutes down to the neighborhood beach, and I could actually walk to the beach, but it's not like the type of beach that you would see like in the ocean. The Puget Sound is connected to the ocean, but if you look at a map of Washington, you see this big bar of water come down
right?
From north of the state, and that's like what they call the Puget Sound. So it's salt water, but there's not like waves or anything. It's there's a current, but if you walk a lot of different places in Washington, there's a lot of places to live right on the Puget Sound.
It sounds kind of similar. My parents' hometown, Port Washington, Wisconsin, is on Lake Michigan. So it's sort of like a different kind of beach town than, like, you know, the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific Ocean. But obviously Lake Michigan is fresh water, so you could drink it, too, if you really wanted to.
Yeah, the salt water, I don't suggest drinking that. That's not a good experience, especially when you're swimming in it and you just get a bunch up your nose. That's never fun.
Okay, cool. So I'm trying to, so let's see, if it's sort of, what would you consider your community like when you were a kid? Did you have a, I don't know, I'm trying to sort of build on here. My childhood, you know, I think you've listened to some of my episodes, so it's, you can tell I've lived all over. did you grow up in sort of, so was that the main industry in the town, fishing, or was it a different one? Was there a big plant everybody worked at, or?
Well, one of the big things that was from where I was from, being on the Puget Sound, was the ferry system. That's actually where my dad, that's where he actually still currently works. He's about to retire. But to get from one side of the Puget Sound to the other, you could drive around, or there's different ports where they actually have a ferry system. It's a state-run ferry system where you could actually take a boat and actually go to Seattle or Edmonds, Washington, and pay a toll.
Much quicker than driving all the way around.
Oh, definitely. So a lot of people who commute, who would commute from like areas where I'm from, kind of in the more of the suburbs, they would go, and if they worked in Seattle, they would take the ferry boat. And of course, you could drive around, but like you said, it's a lot quicker just to take the ferry. So a lot of people work there. But other than that, a lot of people would commute normally to the city, as far as big industry. And actually, right next, as far as the fishing goes, right next to where I lived, there's a couple Indian reservations.
Well, that's really cool. There's quite a few in Wisconsin, too. So this is sounding very similar to Wisconsin. you mentioned your dad was a ferryman. You'll have to listen to this old song from the 80s that I got turned on to by South African radio, because this artist, I guess, is touring South Africa. And it's called Don't Pay the Ferryman.
Oh, really? It's a South African band?
No, it was an English band, but...
Oh, okay.
But they were touring there, because I'd never heard of this song. It's some really weird, whacked-out 80s song, and it's hilarious, because it's like, don't pay the ferryman. It's sketchy.
I'm going to have to find that link and send it to my dad. He'll get a hoot out of that.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, a lot of commuters. So it's kind of a bit of a bedroom community to Seattle, but not quite. Did it have its own identity, this town?
Well, yeah. I mean, in a sense, it's, I guess you could, to put it one way, there was kind of a lot of, like, hippies, you know. you could put it a lot of naturalists. It's kind of very earthy, I guess. I don't know the right word to use for it. But it's definitely a lot different than where I am now here in Indiana. you know, there's a lot of, you know, it's very progressive. I guess there's the word to use. It's very progressive.
Boy, this sounds so similar to Wisconsin. No, I'm kidding. There's other parts of Wisconsin. But yeah, okay, so cool. So I guess so do you still feel a strong connection to your hometown? Do you miss it? Do you miss things about it? Is there anything you miss about it?
Well, I mean, that's where my family's at, so that's one aspect where a lot of the family and some friends and just kind of the community from where I was from. But honestly, the weather, like 10 out of the 12 months of the year, the weather was really, you know, just kind of the stereotype, very rainy, kind of cold. But man, if you go there in like June and July, or even June, July, and August, the weather's just great because there's no humidity. Usually it's sunny in 70s much of the time, and of course you're gonna have your rainy days being in Washington. But it's beautiful weather, beautiful scenery, and no humidity. That's one big thing I never really experienced till coming out to Indiana was the humidity.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of what it's like, that northern rainy area. Also, you know, I've heard that's much like what British Columbia is like as well. Of course, I've never been to either place, but in Wisconsin, I would say it doesn't get that humid either. Now, in Kentucky and Indiana, it gets pretty humid. So, and in North Carolina, it gets very humid.
North Carolina, I've never been there. It gets humid in North Carolina, you said?
Oh, it's terrible. The heat index sometimes will be like 10 or 15 degrees above the actual temperature.
Oh, wow. The farthest east I've gone is Ohio, so that's pretty much as far east as I've traveled.
Man, you are a West Coaster.
Yeah. Getting drawn. I'm having to venture out.
Okay, cool. So, yeah. So it's interesting that some ways you're describing your childhood does fit, you know, the stereotype of Washington, you know, being a hippie town that's on the coast, right?
And right.
And so that's so you still haven't burst much of my bubbles yet, but no. I don't know. I am a geographer, so I guess I know a little bit about everywhere. So I guess this leads us into a sort of second part of our discussion. Why did you want to leave, right? I mean, isn't it just awesome, Seattle? Isn't it like the best place ever? Isn't Washington the best state ever?
Well, you know, it's really the only place I'd ever really known. I had been to Oregon and California before, but other than that, those were the only two states that I had ever really traveled to, just to kind of visit family, going on a road trip, traveling back and forth. But it wasn't until probably my teenage years I started kind of partying a lot and ended up getting kind of in the drug scene and got to a real low point in my life. And I heard about a place out in Ellettsville, Indiana. It was like a Christian discipleship ministry for guys who were struggling with addiction like myself. And so that's really what made me come to Indiana in the first place, and just kind of built my roots out here, finished the program, and transformed my life. My life's a lot different than it was before.
So you're Kurt Cobain who got clean.
What's that? Yeah, exactly. I did. Luckily didn't end up like old Kurt there. But
no, that's interesting. So yeah, that is the other stereotype, that there is a humongous drug problem in Seattle. Is that true? Is it?
Oh, absolutely. And that's another thing, kind of to go back to the kind of progressive, idea of that area. I mean, Washington was one of the first states to legalize not only medical marijuana, but actual just recreational marijuana. So right now, and this wasn't like this when I left back in 2011, but right now, I mean, there's literally shops where you can just go to and buy pot without a prescription or anything. So in that aspect, I know that's not the hard drugs, but that just kind of gives a picture of the mentality. It's probably not looked at as harmful. Definitely not considered a gateway drug like a lot of people would, like myself, would probably contest.
Yeah, that is an interesting sort of discussion. I'm a fence sitter on a lot of these things. I think the biggest problem with a lot of them is that there's just some people who can't handle these kind of things, you know, and I don't know what you do for those people, you know. I don't have an addictive personality per se. I mean, kind of. Like, there are some things that I do a lot of, like I eat a lot of cheese, okay? But, you know, I've always been able to put something down, so it's hard for me sometimes when I watched a documentary once they did about Seattle and the heroin epidemic and what their police department is trying to do to combat it, and I just, it was so hard for me to identify sometimes with those people, right? You know, and I'm not saying that, I understand it's a very addictive drug, okay? Right? But like,
right.
You know, it's crazy. You see these people, right? And they just, they're totally recidivist, right? And it's like, man, you know, it doesn't matter how negative the consequences get for these people, right?
Right. And that's the thing. And that's how a lot of times it turns out, is because usually it doesn't start out as so much of a, man, I got to have it every day kind of thing. It starts off gradually. And that's one of the reasons for, you know, as far as the marijuana, you know, and like you said, there's some people who can, you know, smoke marijuana and it doesn't really take over their life. But for others like myself, that's what I started on. And then just more out of curiosity as a progression over a several year period, you know, it was just kind of, yeah, that felt kind of good. So I went to the next thing and then the next thing. And then eventually I was kind of on the harder stuff, you know, so it was kind of a progression. But then there's some people who, you know, it never really affects them too much. But it's one of those things where, you know, you just never know. You never know who's gonna fall into that trap.
Yeah, it's very tricky. So you moved to Indiana because you heard about this discipleship ministry for people who were on drugs, I guess, addicted, right?
Right.
Am I characterizing this correctly?
Right. Yeah. It's not so much of a rehab, because I've been to rehab programs, but it's more of just a ministry where you go and basically study the Bible and just really build a relationship with Jesus Christ. And kind of the idea is, you know, if you find Christ, if you find a true relationship with Him, He's going to change your heart. You know, so the philosophy is a little bit different than a normal rehab. It's more of the fact that you know, a drug, whether it be just like you were saying, you know, there's different people are addicted to different things. In one way or another, I would argue one way or another, everyone's addicted to something. It just manifests itself in different ways. So for me, it was, you know, that pleasure of drugs. And really the idea behind Saul of Paul Ministries was, if you allow God to come in, change your heart, He'll change you from the inside out, rather than just change you through behavior modification, which a lot of rehabs do. And sometimes that works for people. It just didn't work for me.
So how did you hear about this ministry then? Because, I mean, you were just basically, you know, living the Seattle lifestyle, I guess. Or the,
right.
Right.
Yeah, it was a guy who I actually used to party with and use drugs with. He actually, his mother lived out here in Indiana, and he kind of went back and forth as a kid, back and forth from Indiana to Washington. So he already had roots kind of out here. So when he tried to make a clean break and get on the right path, he moved out here with his mom and ended up finding the same program that I went to. But he went to it a couple years before me, and then kind of through, I think, Facebook or I was about to say MySpace, but that's a little too far back. But I think it was through Facebook he ended up getting a hold of me, and you know, he told me about it, and I kind of shrugged it off. But eventually, I realized, man, I really need to make a change. So I gave it a shot.
And that's a pretty big leap of faith, I have to say, to go from Washington to Indiana. I mean, what did you think of Indiana before you moved there?
You know what? I did not have really any idea. I mean, if you were to ask me on a map, if you were to show me a map, and this is how just closed-minded I was, just living in my little Washington, Kingston, Washington bubble. If you were to take a map of the United States and take out the names, so I couldn't see the names over each state, and told me, and you asked me to show you where Indiana was, I probably would have shown you like Montana or something. I mean, my thoughts. I had no idea where. I didn't realize it was that far east. So I just said Indiana. I obviously knew the name and heard of the state, but it was just the farthest place in my mind. I really didn't have too much of a thought on it, other than it seemed like it would be like a rural area.
Because, you know, as we discussed in our second episode with, you know, Jay, he had actually moved to Bloomington to get to a more diverse crowd from Texas. And you're sort of an opposite, right? You moved later in life to Indiana to get around a less decadent crowd, perhaps we could say.
Well, I mean, really, the my sole purpose for coming out here, and my real plan was never really to stay. In Indiana, my original plan was just to kind of go to this program and thinking, you know, well, I'll just get away from Washington for a little while, and then I wasn't even planning on finishing the program. It was a 7-month program. I really, in my heart, kind of just thought, well, I'll just go there for a few months and then, you know, just go back to Washington. And once I got there, I really realized, man, I need to stay here, you know. I really didn't have too much of a plan, but I ended up staying out here and settling here in Bedford, and that's where I met my wife Kendall, and you know, I met her through at church, and we kind of got grounded out here, and we bought a house, and now I'm actually running a program. It's like a phase two program for guys that are leaving that first phase one discipleship ministry. So, but to answer your question, I didn't really have too much of thought on the diversity aspect, but in hindsight and looking back and where I was and looking at where I'm at now, as far as the culture and just kind of the philosophy or the mindset of where people are, I much prefer Indiana.
It's very interesting to me as a geographer and, you know, being someone who's lived in 5 states and is originally, I guess I most identify with the culture of Wisconsin, although I do have a lot of ties to Kentucky now as well. You know, in Wisconsin, it's a very balanced state, if you will, I think. I think I drove that point home enough 2 podcasts ago. I don't know if I did or I didn't. But I feel like there's, you know, there's all kinds of people there, right? And it somehow coexists, right? You know, there's conservatives and liberals and all kinds of things, right?
Sure.
And it's just very interesting to me to see what people do with their lives, you know. Because I mentioned to Jay, you know, I have 2 friends that moved to New York City. Well, I mentioned to Malik last week that I had 2 friends that moved to New York City from Kentucky. One loves it and one hates it. So it's very interesting. As you see your life going forward, you say you feel like you've integrated into Indiana. What do you like the most about Indiana? Because I actually haven't had anyone talk up Indiana on any of my episodes yet. So,
right. Well, I mean, really, honestly, the people. And like I said, I have only the West Coast kind of perception of where I lived before. And then coming out to Indiana, I noticed even at the airport when I first got here, and before anyone had picked me up, I went to like a little store inside the airport when I was waiting for my ride to pick me up to take me to the program. I just knew, you just felt more of a welcoming, like friendly spirit on people in comparison to where I lived before. Just like a kindness, I guess you'd call it like a Southern hospitality. I know Indiana's kind of not in the deep South or anything, but just maybe since we're from Southern Indiana, I guess you could throw it in there. But
yeah, I will say Southern Indiana feels, and it'll probably make some people mad, but oh well, it feels kind of Southern. We'll put it that way.
Sure. Yeah,
it is settled by a lot of people who are descended from people from Kentucky. So Southern
Indiana. And that's the thing I was going to add. I know this is kind of a side note, but being, you know, Indiana, it seems like we're always kind of poking fun at people from Kentucky. Are people from Kentucky, who do they poke fun of?
Mainly West Virginia.
Okay.
Actually, seems like I had never heard of Bloomington before I moved there. So I didn't know much about IU. I knew it existed. The only reason I knew existed, actually, this is horrible. I'm a big Wisconsin football fan, the Badgers. And one year they beat Indiana 83-20. And that's when I knew who IU was.
That's how you got acquainted with them, huh?
Yeah. So it's terrible. But no, I don't know. All I thought of Indiana was flat and cornfields because we would drive through it to go to Wisconsin, and we'd drive on Interstate 65 the entire way. So,
and that's really what I thought of too. I remember when I was coming from the airport and to the program. I remember, especially Southern Indiana. So we went to the Indianapolis airport and then driving in. I just remember seeing big cornfields, and I remember just thinking, I asked the person who was driving me, are there any Amish around here? Because I've never seen an Amish person. And they said, yeah. And I just remember being amazed by that. Like, oh my goodness, where in the world am I? it was a culture shock, that's for sure. And that on top of it was the end of June when I showed up. So I remember just that humidity hit me in the face right when I got off the airplane and never experienced that either. I mean, it would get warm in California, and some days it would get a little hot in Washington, but never combined with that humidity.
That's so funny. So, so I take it then you wouldn't move back to Washington then?
Well, I mean, like I said, I kind of got grounded here with my wife and the ministry that I run. We house men who come out of the Saul to Paul program. So I got a lot of I really feel like God wants me here right now. But as far as moving in the future, I wouldn't totally be opposed to it if it was for the right reason. But really everything that, makes me content in life is here. Like I said, other than my family, miss my family also. But other than that, I really feel grounded here in Indiana.
Now, what does your family think of Indiana, since they're from Washington as well?
Well, they're talking about, and they're kind of in retirement, getting to that retirement age stage. So they've come out and visit several times, and they're talking about possibly buying a house out here and living out here half the year. So they're really talking about living in Washington half the time, and or at least they've mentioned this in the past, and then coming to Indiana half the time.
Oh wow! So do you miss Indiana? They wouldn't feel like totally bored, or I did have an Australian person in one of the geography groups claim that they didn't want to be in the heartland of America because I posted this article, I forget who did now, I think it was U.S. World News, and they rated all the states on a bunch of different metrics. And everybody was poking fun at the article because it ranked Iowa number one overall.
Oh, okay.
I was like, all right. And this guy was like, well, Iowa, I don't want to be in the heartland of America, this Australian guy. And I was like, why not? And he's like, well, boring towns, boring places. And I was like, you're just not doing it right, man. He lives in Melbourne, Australia, though, a very urban area.
Okay. Yeah, it just depends on some people like that, that slower pace, and I kind of do too, it does kind of have a bit of a slower pace, at least to where we are here in Bedford. But it's nice, and it's, like you said, there's IU that's nearby, so there's Bloomington. You're about an hour and a half from Indianapolis, so that's it's not like we're too far out to where it's no man's land.
I have to go through Chicago a bunch to go to Wisconsin, and that often feels a little too fast for me, but cool. So let's see, I guess we'll sort of wind it down here with a final section, if you will. Is there, what do you see, the future as bright or dark for both Indiana and Washington?
Well, we'll just kind of connect with the last segment as far as my parents coming here, and it kind of ties into the answer to this question. My parents, particularly my dad, he's involved with politics out in Washington, and he's very conservative as to where, so he's kind of like a duck out of water in comparison to the climate and the culture out there, because it's extremely liberal. So that's one of the reasons why, other than, of course, you know, his son being out here, he's liking the idea of Indiana because it is a little bit more conservative. I guess it really just depends on your viewpoint and where you're looking at things. So for some people, it might look like Washington's looking up because they're very progressive and they're moving in a certain direction. But as to where someone else who's more conservative, they would look at it and say, well, there's nothing good, you know, nothing good to look forward to, I guess, just for the fact that it's the culture and the climate is changing and definitely in the it's going left. So
That's something sort of interesting I was going to kind of touch on a bit to finish out here a little too. I find it very interesting because in Washington you have this thing. I don't know if you listened to episode 5 I did with a person who's currently living in Oregon, but it's an interesting phenomenon to me to be in a state where sort of one base can just run roughshod over everybody else's politics, if you will. Because, you know, in Wisconsin, you can't do that. That would never happen, right? You can't. It's never going to be a fully liberal or conservative state, right?
Sure.
You know, it's always been a battleground state. It's always been a state that flips. And it's also interesting because it seems like Indiana has kind of bent conservative in the past couple decades.
Right, yeah. And I wasn't here when it happened, but Indiana, I mean, just from what I've experienced, it does seem a lot more conservative. But I mean, in 2008...
It voted for Obama.
Right. And I was surprised to hear that. Somebody had to tell me that, and I almost, you know, kind of questioned them at first. But yeah, sure enough, at least in 2008, not so much in 2012, but yeah, 2008, it went Obama. So it's conservative, but it just goes to show that, you know, it's possible to flip. As to where Washington, I would be extremely surprised if there was ever a Republican, or at least from here on out, a Republican or conservative governor or anything of that matter, at least that was really conservative. They might call themselves a Republican, but to be a Republican in Washington as far as in a higher office like that, I'd be really surprised.
What do you think causes this sort of roughshodness in some states?
Well, I mean, I guess it's just we're a product of our environment in a lot of cases. So I guess just from the people that have gone before us, just certain webs of thought and different ways of thinking just kind of passes on from one generation to the next. And I guess it really just – I think I ask myself the same question at times, but with Washington, it really I don't know. It really is extremely
because it's extremely California, different. You know, was responsible for Reagan in the 80s, right?
And right.
California is where Reagan was from.
Yeah, exactly, that's a good point, you know, and it just goes to show how much things have changed, even in the short amount of time, the time span. Because even though Reagan, he was a Republican, he, you know, in some areas he was kind of more moderate, you know. So maybe that might be the only reason why he even passed, you know, as far as being a Republican mayor or a Republican governor in California. But the climate and the culture, especially Oregon, Washington, and California, there's even been talks. And I don't know if it would ever happen, but there's a movement kind of growing that they want to break off and be their own country, essentially.
I've heard those time and again. It is interesting. It's always them or Texas, you know, both ends of the spectrum, you know.
Right. Yeah, and it's probably, you know, people being a little dramatic, you know, because especially, you know, when Trump won, there was a big uproar, you know, but if any three states were to break off, it would be those three in the sense of just the culture mindset. But I don't think that would ever happen. But
because I find myself a little bit constantly wondering if like This is a really crazy thing I'll put out here. I like to just be crazy on my podcast. It's my podcast. I can do what I want to. But
that's right.
I mean, I don't know how you sort of defend the rights of the rural versus the urban, you know? In sort of an overarching case, I did see an argument that even though Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, generally speaking, you couldn't just campaign on the urban vote and win the presidential election in the United States, because the top 100 cities only make up like 18% of the population. But, you know, in a state like Washington, right, there, Seattle and Tacoma, I mean, completely overwhelm the eastern half of the state.
Right, yeah.
So I don't know if you do you have to preserve the people's rights, or is it one person, one vote?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I wouldn't know on that. It's I mean, definitely Washington and Tacoma, because the west side of the state is where it's mostly it's a lot more densely populated, as to where the eastern side of the state, it's a lot more spread out and rural. So if you were to get a lot of people voting one particular way, and for in the west side of the state, you're going to see a lot more of a liberal turnout, and it's a lot more densely populated. And then you get the right side of the state being more conservative, but it's more spread out and it's not as populated. The people that are voting on the west side of the state are going to affect the people on clear on the other side of the state.
I don't know. So I guess we'll leave the podcast with a question, and I'll put it in my poll for this week, of course. Where do you draw the line there? Do you have to protect certain rights of the voters, or do you have to, you know, allow just one person, one vote? Is it really plainly that simple? I don't know. And do you have to force a balance?
Right. Yeah, finding that sweet spot and that balance, that's the tough spot, because you could make probably a good argument for both sides.
Cool. Is there anything else you want to talk about Washington for the listeners?
No. I appreciate being on the show, and I mean, it's a great place to visit. I always tell people, if they want to visit Washington, just go in the summertime. If you're going to go during the rainy season, you're probably going to be a little bit more disappointed. But if you go in the summertime, that's the best time to visit. If you want to get the great views of the scenery and the weather.
Sweet. Well, maybe I'll have to do that sometime if I get some spare time. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, David, and we'll say goodbye to the fans.
All right. Bye, fans.
All right. Cool.